Chapter 15, in which Howl goes to a funeral in disguise. The dog man curled up heavily on Sophie's toes when she went back to her sewing. Perhaps he was hoping she would manage to lift the spell if he stayed close to her. When a big red-bearded man burst into the room carrying a box of things and shed his velvet cloak to become Michael, still carrying a box of things, the dog man rose up and wagged his tail. He let Michael pat him and rub his ears.
"I hope he stays," Michael said. "I've always wanted a dog."
Howl heard Michael's voice. He arrived downstairs wrapped in the brown patchwork cover off his bed. Sophie stopped sewing and took a careful grip on the dog. But the dog was courteous to Howl, too. He did not object when Howl fetched a hand out of the coverlet and patted him.
"Well,"
Howl croaked, dispersing clouds of dust as he conjured some more tissues.
"I got everything," said Michael. "And there's a real piece of luck, Howl. There's an empty shop for sale down in Market Chipping. It used to be a hat shop. Do you think we could move the castle there?"
Howl sat on a tall stool like a robed Roman senator and considered.
"It depends how much it costs," he said. "I'm quite tempted to move the Porthaven entrance there. That won't be easy because it will mean moving Calcifer. Porthaven is where Calcifer actually is. What do you say, Calcifer?"
"It will take a very careful operation to move me," Calcifer said. He had become several shades paler at the thought. "I think you should leave me where I am."
"So Fanny is selling the shop," Sophie thought, as the other three went on discussing the move. And so much for the conscience Howl said he had. But the main thing on her mind was the puzzling behaviour of the dog. In spite of Sophie telling him many times that she could not take the spell off him, he did not seem to want to leave. He did not want to bite Howl. He let Michael take him for a run on Porthaven Marshes that night and the following morning. His aim seemed to be to become part of the household.
"Though if I were you, I'd be in Upper Folding making sure to catch Letty on the rebound," Sophie told him.
Howl was in and out of bed all the next day. When he was in bed, Michael had to tear up and down the stairs. When he was up, Michael had to race about measuring the castle with him and fixing metal brackets to every single corner. In between, Howl kept appearing, robed in his quilt and clouds of dust, to ask questions and make announcements, mostly for Sophie's benefit.
"Sophie, since you whitewashed over all the marks we made when we invented the castle, perhaps you can tell me where the marks in Michael's room were."
"No," said Sophie, sewing in her 70th blue triangle. "I can't." Howl sneezed sadly and retired. Shortly, he emerged again.
"Sophie, if we were to take that hat shop, what would we sell?"
Sophie found she'd had enough of hats to last a lifetime.
"Not hats," she said. "You can buy the shop, but not the business, you know." "Apply your fiendish mind to the matter," said Howl. "Or even think, if you know how." And he marched away upstairs again. 5 minutes later, down he came again. "Sophie, have you any preferences about the other entrances? Where would you like us to live?"
Sophie instantly found her mind going to Mrs. Fairfax's house.
"I'd like a nice house with lots of flowers," she said.
"I see," croaked Howl, and marched away again.
Next time he appeared, he was dressed. That made three times that day, and Sophie thought nothing of it, until Howl put on the velvet cloak Michael had used and became a pale, coughing, red-bearded man with a large red handkerchief held to his nose. She realized Howl was going out then.
"You'll make your cold worse," she said.
"I shall die, and then you'll all be sorry," the red-bearded man said, and went out through the door with the knob green down.
For an hour after that, Michael had time to work on his spell. Sophie got as far as her 84th blue triangle. Then the red-bearded man was back again. He shed the velvet cloak and became Howl, coughing harder than before, and, if that was possible, more sorry for himself than ever.
"I took the shop," he told Michael. "It's got a useful shed at the back and a house at the side, and I took the lot. I'm not sure what I shall pay for it all with, though."
"What about the money you get if you find Prince Justin?" Michael asked.
"You forget," croaked Howl. "The whole object of this operation is not to look for Prince Justin. We are going to vanish." And he went coughing upstairs to bed, where he shortly began shaking the beams, sneezing for attention again. Michael had to leave the spell and rush upstairs. Sophie might have gone, except the dog man got in the way when she tried. This was another part of his odd behaviour. He did not like Sophie to do anything for Howl. Sophie felt this was fairly reasonable. She began on her 85th triangle. Michael came cheerfully down and worked on his spell again. He was so happy that he was joining in Calcifer's saucepan song and chatting to the skull just as Sophie did while he worked.
"We're going to live in Market Chipping," he told the skull. "I can go and see my Letty every day."
"Is that why you told Howl about the shop?" Sophie asked, threading her needle. By this time she was on her 89th triangle.
"Yes," Michael said happily. "Letty told me about it when we were wondering how we'd ever see one another again. I told her—"
He was interrupted by Howl, trailing downstairs in his quilt again.
"This is positively my last appearance," Howl croaked. "I forgot to say that Mrs. Pentstemon is being buried tomorrow on her estate near Porthaven, and I shall need the suit cleaned."
He brought the grey and scarlet suit out from inside his coverlet and dropped it on Sophie's lap.
"You're attending to the wrong suit," he told Sophie. "This is the one I like, but I haven't the energy to clean it myself."
"You don't need to go to the funeral, do you?" Michael said anxiously.
"I wouldn't dream of staying away," said Howl. "Mrs. Pentstemon made me the wizard I am. I have to pay my respects."
"But your cold's worse," said Michael.
"He's made it worse," said Sophie, "by getting up and chasing around."
Howl at once put on his noblest expression.
"I'll be all right," he croaked, "as long as I keep out of the sea wind. It's a bitter place, the Pentstemon estate. The trees are all bent sideways, and there's no shelter for miles."
Sophie knew he was just playing for sympathy. She snorted.
"And what about the witch?" Michael asked. Howl coughed piteously. "I shall go in disguise, probably as another corpse," he said, trailing back toward the stairs.
"Then you need a winding sheet and not this suit," Sophie called after him.
Howl trailed away upstairs without answering, and Sophie did not protest. She now had the charmed suit in her hands, and it was too good a chance to miss. She took up her scissors and hacked the grey and scarlet suit into 7 jagged pieces. That ought to discourage Howl from wearing it. Then she got to work on the last triangles of the blue and silver suit, mostly little fragments from round the neck. It was now very small indeed. It looked as if it might be a size too small even for Mrs. Pentstemon's page boy.
"Michael," she said, "hurry up with that spell. It's urgent."
"I won't be long now," Michael said. Half an hour later, he checked things off on his list and said he thought he was ready. He came over to Sophie carrying a tiny bowl with a very small amount of green powder in the bottom.
"Where do you want it?"
"Here," said Sophie, snipping off the last threads. She pushed the sleeping dog man aside and laid the child-sized suit carefully on the floor. Michael, quite as carefully, tipped the bowl and sprinkled powder on every inch of it. Then they both waited, rather anxiously. A moment passed. Michael sighed with relief. The suit was gently spreading out larger. They watched it spread and spread until one side of it piled up against the dog man, and Sophie had to pull it further away to give it room. After about 5 minutes, they both agreed that the suit looked Hal's size again. Michael gathered it up and carefully shook the excess powder off into the grate. Calcifer flared and snarled. The dog man jumped in his sleep.
"Watch it," said Calcifer. "That was strong."
Sophie took the suit and hobbled upstairs on tiptoe with it. Hal was asleep on his grey pillows, with his spiders busily making new webs around him. He looked noble and sad in his sleep. Sophie hobbled to put the blue and silver suit on the old chest by the window, trying to tell herself that the suit had got no larger since she picked it up. "Still, if it stops you going to the funeral, that's no loss," she murmured, as she took a look out of the window. The sun was low across the neat garden. A large, dark man was out there, enthusiastically throwing a red ball toward Hal's nephew, Neil, who was standing with a look of patient suffering holding a bat. Sophie could see the man was Neil's father.
"Snooping again," Hal said suddenly behind her.
Sophie swung round guiltily to find that Hal was only half awake, really. He may even have thought it was the day before, because he said,
"Teach me to keep off envy's stinging. That's all part of past years now. I love Wales, but it doesn't love me. Megan's full of envy because she's respectable and I'm not."
Then he woke up a little more and asked,
"What are you doing?"
"Just putting out your suit for you," Sophie said,
and hobbled hastily away. Hal must have gone back to sleep. He did not emerge again that night. There was no sign of him stirring when Sophie and Michael got up next morning. They were careful not to disturb him. Neither of them felt that going to Mrs. Pentstemon's funeral was a good idea. Michael crept out on the hills to take the dog man for a run. Sophie tiptoed about, getting breakfast, hoping Hal would oversleep. There was still no sign of Hal when Michael came back. The dog man was starving hungry. Sophie and Michael were hunting in the closet for things a dog could eat when they heard Hal coming slowly downstairs.
"Sophie!"
Hal's voice said accusingly. He was standing holding the door to the stairs open with an arm that was entirely hidden inside an immense blue and silver sleeve. His feet, on the bottom stair, were standing inside the top half of a gigantic blue and silver jacket. Hal's other arm did not come anywhere near the other huge sleeve. Sophie could see that arm in outline, making bulging gestures under a vast frill of collar. Behind Hal, the stairs were full of blue and silver suit, trailing back all the way to his bedroom.
"Oh, dear," said Michael. "Hal, it was my fault.
Your fault?
Garbage," said Hal. "I can detect Sophie's hand a mile off, and there are several miles of this suit. Sophie, dear, where is my other suit?"
Sophie hurriedly fetched the pieces of the grey and scarlet suit out of the broom cupboard where she had hidden them. Hal surveyed them.
"Well, that's something," he said. "I'd been expecting it to be too small to see. Give it here, all seven of it."
Sophie held the bundle of grey and scarlet cloth out toward him. Hal, with a bit of searching, succeeded in finding his hand inside the multiple folds of blue and silver sleeve and working it through a gap between two tremendous stitches. He grabbed the bundle off her.
"I am now," he said, "going to get ready for the funeral. Please, both of you refrain from doing anything whatsoever while I do. I can tell Sophie is in top form at the moment, and I want this room the usual size when I come back into it."
He set off with dignity to the bathroom, wading in blue and silver suit. The rest of the blue and silver suit followed him, dragging step by step down the stairs and rustling across the floor. By the time Hal was in the bathroom, Most of the jacket was on the ground floor, and the trousers were appearing on the stairs. Howell half shut the bathroom door and seemed to go on hauling the suit in, hand over hand. Sophie and Michael and the dogman stood and watched yard after yard of blue or silver fabric proceed across the floor, decorated with an occasional silver button the size of a millstone and enormous regular rope-like stitches. There may have been nearly a mile of it.